Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Tyler, the host of the Unleashing Deep End podcast, and we are back for another special episode of the pod. Today, I am really excited. We've got a guest who is doing some really interesting things in the deep end space, doing something that I knew very little about, and I'm coming up to speed, learning quite a bit. But everybody, welcome Robin from Wingbits to the pod. Robin, thank you for being here. I'm excited to get a chance to chat. You guys are doing some really cool stuff.
Yeah, likewise. Really excited to be here. Thanks so much for the time.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump into things. So for folks who maybe don't know who you are, can you just give a little bit of background about how you got into the space, how you got into Web3, how you got into this interesting problem that you're solving, but just give some context and background for everybody who's tuning in.
Yeah. So, I mean, Web3 is relatively new for me. My background is I actually started as a professional golfer a few years back. But after that, I have been an entrepreneur for several years, built several businesses, but all in traditional areas. I was quite heavily involved just investing in crypto since maybe like 2017, 2018, but I never built anything. So my co-founder is Alex. He's been involved in several projects like this, like WeatherXM and Planet Watch and stuff like that. So he originally came up with the use case. What we saw was that the idea kind of originated from ADSB Exchange, which is a smaller tracking network. It sold to an investment company about a year ago. And we saw that the community started dropping off like really fast. Like within 2 hours, they lost 20%, I think, of all their data providers. Wow. And we started really diving into why. And it really comes down to that the community's interests are not aligned with the interests of the company. Where all their existing networks, I mean, you really don't earn anything or you don't really get rewarded in any way. We wanted to create a different network where people got rewarded based on their contribution. And when thinking about how do you reward people on a global scale, there's just no better use case than to doing it through a blockchain. So that's how the idea originated. And then when we started diving into the use case, we went through this startup accelerator called Antler. We just learned more and more and more and just saw the opportunity in the space. And obviously, we got our first investment there from a traditional VC. And then that really kind of solidified what we believe was true, that there's a need for innovation in this space. And the DeepIn model is just absolutely perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we keep seeing time and time again how well the DeepIn model is working for sort of ensuring that all the stakeholders are involved and can participate in a way that is beneficial for all. Because as you mentioned with this other company, and we'll dig into those details a little bit, but you know that just wasn't the case. They weren't able to sort of continue fostering a relationship with the stakeholders that were counted and where it mattered. And so I'd love to dig into specifically the problem set that you're solving. Can you take us back a little bit with some of your background? One of the things that I think is really interesting specifically about you is that you've had a lot of success in the Web2 space. Can you talk through just what that transition period has been like as you've been, as you founded and I believe you exited your last company. And so what was that? What were sort of the learnings and the key takeaways? And how are things maybe a little bit different within the Web3 space? We get a lot of builders that are interested in starting a project. And I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of values that don't change. But at the same time, there are things that are different within kind of this decentralized ethos. Can you maybe talk through some of that from your perspective as a successful Web2 builder coming into Web3?
Yeah, I mean, I think most Web2 businesses kind of start out with the right intention of, you know, doing the right thing towards, you know, your partners, your consumers, and all that stuff. Like you look at, you know, Facebook and Twitter, they all started kind of open source, and then they kind of retract that when they get large enough. So I think everyone starts out on Web2 with good intentions. But then just how the whole model is built in Web2 is, you know, you have to kind of maximize profits over time, and the incentive are misaligned. I mean, obviously, I never took anything, you know, I didn't do an IPO or anything like that. But when there's still the same things kind of apply to at least a DeepIn, because I haven't built anything outside of DeepIn space, where it's finally a space where, okay, you have to have a real use case and you have to build a real business on one end. And now it's just like the added bonus that you can actually reward the people that are helping you in the community. And it's definitely a challenge because I don't think anyone has, you know, it's still a new space. No one has really proven like this is the go-to model. This is the go-to tokenomics. Like, you know, this is the distribution schedule and all this stuff. No one really knows. But I think it's been actually kind of good coming from an outside perspective, because my background is, you know, business and the commercial side. I'm not technical. So all I'm focusing on is, like, I need to build a real business on this one end. And then we figure out, okay, we build this. How do we kind of incorporate the Web3 portion? How do we reward people? How do we create incentive models that are, you know, that are sustainable long term? Because I think prior in the Web3 space, you see a lot of, like, kind of like projects go, they get really hyped and they go up, and then there's no use case and they eventually die out. And what I would like to build, which is, I don't know if it's naive, is more of like sustainable growth over time, not just a massive spike. But I think the Deepin model is better suited to do that. But I think I take a lot of learnings from the Web2 space. I mean, when it comes to tokenomics, it's essentially, you know, regular finance just applied to the tokens. But it's challenging. It's really fun.
I
didn't know what to expect going into, like, what's the community going to be like? And it's been, you see all these people, like, they're so excited about something that you started and they get to be part of it. And you really, honestly, it's humbling to have so many people come in and being excited about what you're building. But just the enthusiasm of, like, oh, I'm going to build my antenna. This, like, how do we do it? They collaborate in the Discord. I think that's, for me right now, the most fun part is just the community. And that's where we want to spend a lot of time making sure that we set up that portion right. Because I think what the mistake people maybe will make in the Deepin space is that as they grow, they lose sight over who helped you get there, and that's really the community. So I think you have to strike that balance where you have to keep them, you know, happy and treat them right long term, and not lose sight and become, you know, too big for your own self, kind of.
Yeah, that's a challenging dynamic to sort of foster as you have early contributors and that begins to scale up. One of the last episodes that we did was with the founder, who was initially the founder of Seacoin, which is sort of, they were a Deepin project before Deepin, and doing another really interesting solar project right now. And one of the things he said that stuck out to me was that a token has this fascinating way of binding community through to something that they're interested in a way that no other kind of medium or vessel can. Stocks can't do it. All these other, you know, co-ops don't really do it. And so it's really interesting to hear how you're thinking about that, having been invested in Web3, but really now doing it on the business side and sort of thinking about that arc over time. So I'm super interested to dive into that a little bit. But for everybody listening, can you give an overview about what you're building at Wingbits, specifically the problem that you're solving? And we can unpack that a little bit to go into some detail.
Yeah, so what we're building is a token incentivized flight tracking network. So what most people don't understand, and I didn't either until we started diving in, is that the entire aviation industry is essentially built up on these volunteer networks where people host an antenna at home. The planes send a data signal called ADS-B every half second. It's at 1090 megahertz. And that's kind of like a license plate of a plane. It has like speed, altitude, heading, airplane model, and a bunch of other information. And they send that, we capture it and essentially store and aggregate it. But if you look at an airport, they have no idea what's going on if it's more than 30 minutes outside of the airport. And they rely on this type of data from, you know, Flight Radar, Flight Aware, and these other networks. So the problem we're trying to solve essentially is that these networks all utilize the same infrastructure. They all utilize the same antennas. They're all having issues growing in the same areas, because there's no incentive. It's hard to incentivize deployment in specific areas, because why would you do it? And as the aviation industry is, it's gonna reach about $6 trillion by 2036. So it's a big industry. ADS-B data is being regulated worldwide. So we're seeing a higher demand for it, both from a point of view of like the airlines buying it to get better overview, but also, you know, there's more and more data analytics coming out that utilize this data. And we just feel like the current models are not great long-term. And also, if you look at our network, we're bringing new people into the space, which is really exciting. You kind of open up the eyes. So I think long-term, that's going to be a big advantage we have.
You talked a little bit at the beginning of there was sort of a Web2 company that was doing or fulfilling part of the need within the space. They got acquired. They lost a lot of the community support as a result of that. What did the landscape look like prior to Wingbits? Because I think this is a really interesting business problem that most people probably either don't know about or they just take for granted all these kind of flight tracking details that you can see. So what did the space look like before you guys came into the market, and what are some of maybe the differentiations between how this was solved without the Deepin model and then what you're doing specifically at Wingbits?
Yeah, so historically, you know, the flight tracking industry at SATA Big Networks have been around for about 15, 20 years, and they're made up pretty much exclusively of aviation enthusiasts. So people that are just really interested in planes, tracking planes, and it's just, it's a hobby, right? Like for these people. So when you become a data provider for the other networks, I mean, and again, like these networks are good, like they're big, they've been around for a long time, they have really cool UIs and stuff. You get access to the platform, essentially a subscription that allows you to do a little more stuff like track specific planes, set notifications and stuff like that. But outside, you know, let's say you track for a network right now, you want to go on vacation for 3 months, just to say. Okay, well, you're probably just going to turn off your antenna because you don't lose anything. You turn it off. When you get back home, you turn it back on and you have your subscription again. So from a kind of like an uptime perspective on a network, that's really not optimal because, you know, at any given point, you're going to have a large percentage of your network, maybe 5 or 10% being offline because, you know, you don't really need it on all the time. And then also doesn't really matter how good your setup is. So if you have an antenna in the basement, as long as you capture some data points, you get the subscription, but that's not really a value to the network. So it makes sense having a model that rewards you more the more you cover and the more data you capture. So those two things combined just allow, we believe, will allow us to build a more robust network with fewer antennas, but still have the same coverage. Because you don't want, you know, you don't want 1,000 antennas in one city because you're getting 1,000 copies of the same plane.
Sure.
So from a latency perspective, that's not good. And just having to deduplicate that much data is also not good. So those are quite big things. And then lastly, let's say that all data networks lack coverage in similar areas. I think we're in a better position to, in the future, maybe incentivize higher during a specific amount of time in those areas to encourage deployment, which will also give us an edge and more target where we deploy things, deploy antennas. And I think that's going to be, at least when we talk to customers, they really like the model.
That's fantastic. I'd love to dive into sort of how you're procuring or really analyzing where those locations need to go. And that's what makes the Deepin model so beautiful for being able to incentivize that. But I was curious, what type of hardware is actually required or involved with this? Is it, you know, sort of off-the-shelf hardware that anybody can go and purchase? Is it something proprietary that you guys sell to your customers that they can deploy? What does that look like from an actual hardware standpoint?
Now, so right now, the most, like for existing networks, and for us at the moment, the most common setup is a Raspberry Pi, like Raspberry Pi 4, maybe 4 gigabyte size, an antenna. It's about 66 centimeters that can capture that 1090 megahertz. And then in between the antenna and the Pi, there's an adapter essentially converting the radio signal into, you know, the binary so we can read it. And you can order, you know, most people buy it on Amazon. If you're in the US, Amazon is great. If you're in the EU, Amazon or like the Pi Hut is really good. But so we're going to, you know, we let people bring their own hardware because we believe that's the right thing to do. But we are looking into creating our own more of a plug and play device. Okay. And that's for two reasons. One is really for maybe people that want to join that are not as technical. It just allows them to essentially just plug it in, connect to the internet and track. But it also allows us to have a little more like almost like those antennas will be harder to spoof. Those devices, so that can kind of be something we measure against. Right now, I mean, there's multiple things we can measure against because, you know, where planes are is pretty open. You know, you can get the flight schedules, but that will again add another like selling point to our service that we have these, not validator, you can say that, but equipment all over the globe that we can kind of measure against.
Gotcha. You mentioned the spoofing aspect to it. How do you guys look at that, maybe is a better way of saying?
Yeah, I mean, let me see. So there's really no area like on Earth, like specifically that we would not want the device. So like, you know, because there's like, even, you know, you may think that it's better to have a device in a high traffic area, but it's really not, because the rewards, how they work, is essentially the whole world is divided into these hexagons. There's going to be a base reward that's the same across all, because we kind of want the whole flight path. So even if it's low traffic area, it doesn't matter. It's still the same base rewards. So from a location perspective, it doesn't really matter, as long as it, you know, has clear line of sight and it's a good setup. From a spoofing perspective, I mean, it's actually quite hard to spoof. Well, it's easy to spoof, but easy to catch. Because it's like, we can get this data to cross-check against from so many places. And also, if you have a device and you create like a million copies of the same data, for example, it doesn't matter, because it's going to be more rewarded based on unique positions and that. So it's no incentive to duplicate data from a device. But obviously, I'm not going to go into specifics how we catch the spoofers, but so far it's been a very minor problem, and there's really no incentive to do it. We think it anyway.
Yeah, makes total sense. It's an interesting thing to hear about, because you know you think you're sort of participating in a network to be able to provide value. So when you hear these kinds of corner cases, maybe where there's some issues, interesting to hear how people are, specifically you guys are thinking about that. One of the other questions I had was, obviously with the DeepIn model, there's sort of this token incentivization for deploying physical hardware. What role does the blockchain play within Wingbits? There's the token component, but are there other things related to, you know, using blockchain infrastructure that relate to what you're doing at Wingbits?
Well, in the beginning, it's mainly going to be for the rewards and the transparency of how much data you've provided. And this is really like, I'm not going to deep dive too much in this, because this is honestly not my area of expertise. This is kind of where Alex comes in.
Yeah.
But I know step one, essentially implement a rewards system. We're going to assign all the antennas like a machine ID. So they essentially, the antenna can transact automatically with like the area that's in the hexagon. So that's going to make it a lot easier. And also obviously transparent. You can see exactly how much data you provided and that's stored. But there will be more use cases for the blockchain later on, but that will be at a later stage. Because right now it's also a balance between, you know, latency and providing the data to a customer. I'm gonna leave that one there, because I don't want to misrepresent what we're gonna do.
Yeah, totally understand. Are there other, you know, DPIN or DY networks that you can leverage? Like, one of the things that came to the top of my mind is LoRaWAN. Is there a future where there you might be able to leverage the LoRaWAN network for people deploying in maybe more remote areas where it's harder to get connectivity in other mediums? Is that something that is potentially on the roadmap, or something that you guys could leverage per se?
Yeah, I mean, so we are, I can't mention who, but we are talking to a network right now about collaborating essentially with the devices, because we have similar requirements on location. But when it comes to, for example, you know, like maybe let's say the Helium network, right? I mean, we do see some people repurposing some Helium miners for our network, but it's mainly about, you can kind of see where, if you look at every project, if you look at their kind of explorer map, the distribution is similar. So the people that are interested in these projects are kind of similar across the board. And obviously that's something we can use in terms of like user adoption. But we will most likely partner up with some projects on creating like devices and kind of collaborating in a way for both projects to grow.
Yeah, that's great. So what types of data sources are required for sort of verifying network data? You know, you talked a little bit about the importance of like location and sort of tracking the entire flight path and what goes into those deployments. But what's sort of involved with that data verification process for Wingbits?
No, so since the data is regulated, everyone will capture the same type of data. So the main thing we look for is obviously like the location of the plane, timestamp, speed, altitude, heading, like all those things. And then we can cross-check, you know, in terms of spoofing to validate the data right now, we just cross-check it against is the plane supposed to be there, essentially, and that's super easy. That's all we do is for verification now, but that's why we want to work on our own devices to essentially be able to have other ways of validating the data. But just to make sure, you know, it's really easy to validate the data.
Yeah.
Just because it's public and we can get all the information to cross-check against really easily.
That's great. Do you have any timelines, obviously we don't want to make any sort of speculations here, but timelines on when people might be able to expect your guys' plug and play hardware that are coming soon, maybe?
I mean, I guess my goal would be to get it out by like end of this year.
That'd be incredible.
And, you know, as with, you know, whether it's Web 2 or Web 3, when you set a plan, you know, there's usually tend to come, some things come up and you have to adjust or retract, and but it will come out, but the goal will be end of the year.
Building hardware products are things that there's, it's challenging. It's not so trivial as software. You know, there's a lot of moving parts, and every time I talk to hardware founders, I'm not jealous of the path that has to go to it, because there's a fair amount of work involved and so many moving parts and whatnot that.
Yeah, and you have, you know, like you sell something to the community, you want to make sure it's good, you want to make sure you can deliver. And also, you know, we're not claiming to be experts at handling all the logistics around hardware, so you need to make sure you have that all lined up to make sure the flow is nice, because it would be annoying ordering hardware and waiting 9 months to get it because you're missing out on 9 months potentially on rewards. So there's a lot of moving pieces that you want to make sure you have covered before you essentially tell the community to buy something, because you want to make sure you can deliver on your promise.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. You talked a bit about some other networks that you might be able to leverage LoRaWAN for one. Are there any other partnership opportunities within the DeepIn space that you are looking at or evaluating that may be beneficial for creating kind of a more optimal network per se, or is it really you guys are focused heavily on building the network effect with users deploying hardware? Is that sort of the main focus right now?
Yeah, I mean, we released beta on November 2nd. It's still super early. I'm sure we're going to look into all that stuff. But right now we have so much to do, just kind of, it's actually hard to find time doing all the stuff we need to do.
Oh yeah.
There's definitely partnerships outside of the DeepIn space that we're looking at pretty heavily as well, to help us grow faster. Nothing. We have one that we're talking to now within the DeepIn space, but that's it for now.
That's great. What is the sort of 10,000 foot view of what you're building start to look like in 1 year and 3 years, and how does that transition as you're getting sort of your core users? You guys mentioned that you launched your beta a few months ago. What do you think the timeline and sort of the story arc of Wingbits is going to look like as you are deploying hardware and building the network effect? How does that transition into usable data that can be resold? Can you sort of give us a bit of an overview of what people might expect from sort of the business side of things?
Yeah, so actually we've been talking to customers now for like over a month, and we're actually currently working on trying to integrate with the first data buyer, which is pretty cool. So we have very clear milestones that we receive from customers. Kind of, some customers require a certain level of coverage, but some customers, they can buy your data as long as you have some unique data that they don't get from other networks. And there's a ton of those customers. So on a monetization perspective, I would expect that we onboard and actually receive money from our first customers within a couple of months to 3 months, maybe. We're not talking millions here, but like the first few customers. I think we can be close to global coverage by end of this year or beginning of 2025. And when you're at that point, it actually opens up a lot more doors to even bigger customers. And the, you know, the kind of amount they pay for this data varies based on what you allow them to do with the data afterwards. But it can reach, I mean, it's quite a lot. So from 10,000 foot view, I think if we can be at global coverage by beginning of 2025, I think we're in a really good position. I mean, we're going to be profitable pretty quickly at that point. And be able to really start feeding some of that back into the community.
Can you talk through that, how that token economic model, the relationship between the data buyers and then how that will affect community members or those who are either holding the token or deploying hardware? Can you talk through that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we're actually right now working super hard on finalizing the tokenomics. We set up our nonprofit foundation. So that's all done. And that's essentially the foundation that's got to monitor and handle the whole token and the community aspect. But I can give you a broad overview of how it works. I mean, it's kind of like the classic network effect. You have community sending us data. We sell the data. A piece of that data goes back into the foundation and community in terms of like increasing the value of the token. And then we pay out the token as a reward. And the more data we get, the more we can sell and the more we put in. Exactly the mechanisms, I mean, I probably have to wait until we finalize the tokenomics. But from a financial perspective, if you look at it, the way we have it now, it makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, people will be able to use the tokens, you know, for data on the platform and, you know, trade with our tokens and so on. But it will be a utility token. So it looks promising. But again, you know, when it comes to the tokenomics, I mean, I don't think anyone can confidently say, like, this is how you do it. It kind of depends on your project, you know, what your needs are, what your user needs are. And also it's still new, but it feels, you know, if you think about it, it makes sense. You feed some of the revenue back into the community over time. It should benefit everyone over time.
Yeah, no, it's certainly at a high level thesis, it's valid and sound. And so it's all the nuance and details that become sort of the important linchpins for this, given the fact that every system is different. Every network effect rollout is going to look a little bit different between projects. And so I'm excited to hear. But at a high level, I think that's going to be really fantastic. And I'm bullish. I think we're all bullish because we know that there's such a great model that can be deployed with solving these kinds of these business problems and use cases.
No, I'm super excited to see, you know, all the projects popping up, because I think finally you'll have a bunch of projects that are real businesses. And I think that's going to sway the whole perception of Web3, because I mean, a question, I think you mentioned earlier, when we talk to investors and stuff like that, we always get the questions from traditional VCs, oh, well, why token? Why not pay out in fiat? Well, you know, there's a million reasons to not do that. But one, I mean, a dollar today is worth less tomorrow. But it's also like the ownership aspect, being part of the community, being able to use the tokens in the community, it feels different. And it allows you, let's say you have voting power and stuff. You don't have that with fiat.
Right.
So it's just a different model that I think if you're not at all in Web3, it's, you know, it takes a few meetings to talk them through it. But then usually after a while, they actually come to the conclusion that it makes total sense, which that has been the most exciting thing to see with our project, talking to the traditional VCs. And them thinking, you know what, we don't normally invest in crypto, but this makes logical sense.
Right.
And that's pretty cool.
And I think you mentioned that you're the first check you guys took from a VC. This was, if I'm not mistaken, their first Web3 investment, or one of their first Web3 investments. Is that right?
When we looked, they have about 0.3% of their portfolio is Web3 based. And I mean, they have over 1,000 investments.
Yeah.
So that's really nice. But that, you know, that combined with we got accepted to Business Sweden, which is a government funded organization. Essentially what they do is they help innovative startups in Sweden scale, create partnerships abroad and stuff like that. And I think we may be the only Web3 in there. And then we got accepted to this EU funded Baltic Accelerator, which also all these little pieces, I feel like just validate, okay, this use case makes a lot of sense compared to maybe what they've seen in the past. Not hard specifically, but the deepened model.
Right. It's pretty incredible to see it all kind of come together. I remember, you know, you mentioned that you were invested in tokens back in the, you know, 2017, 2018 era. And I still remember when, you know, like Chris Berninski put out his, you know, MV equals PQ model, and everybody's trying to sort of develop these very complicated economic models around how networks can scale and they can be somewhat self-sufficient. And so it was relatively complex and not well validated at the time. And now you're sort of seeing that translate in real time to not only success, but something that's very, you know, digestible for VCs, for government entities. And so I think it just lends to the promise of what you're doing, what we're all trying to sort of accomplish and deepen, which is really fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. And I just hope that there's enough projects that, you know, I think, like I said earlier, everyone usually starts out with like the right intention. And I think it's just so important for the space that enough projects prove prove essentially to everybody that this is a sustainable model long term, and not just like a quick super hype makes some people make a bunch of money and then it's dead. But I feel good about it. Like, for what I've seen, the projects, like, I check on all the projects. I mean, go into Discord, and it's very good so far, I think, for a lot of them.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to add about what you're building? Any other details about Wingbits that we didn't get a chance to cover that we can go over?
Oh, as always, when we do these, like, big shout out to, obviously, to our community. If you're not in our Discord, you should definitely join. I mean, it's amazing. You can go see all the setup photos with people's. I mean, people have some really cool antennas. They put out like 20-foot poles on the roof. Massive thanks to the community, really. I mean, so far we haven't even launched the token, so people in the community now are obviously there because they believe we will do the right thing, and I think that's kind of a big deal to put your trust in someone. So really, really thankful for that. But no, I think we're super excited. I think this year is going to be really, really cool. We have a lot of things cooking. I mean, there's going to be some challenges, I'm sure, coming up, or we'll have to adjust along the way. But I know some people also, maybe I answered here, they always ask, when rewards? I know people are eager, and like, it's not like we're not valuing it, but back to the tokenomics, you kind of just have one chance to get it right. And no one really knows what's right, but we're trying to do our utmost to essentially put together a model that we feel like this is what we believe is as close to as perfect as we can. So they will come, hopefully sooner rather than later.
And I think everybody will appreciate the thoughtfulness and sort of the time that's been spent getting it right, rather than some half-baked idea or sort of thesis that doesn't get implemented correctly, and then it just creates problems downstream. That's never good either. So it's a balancing act, without question. And absolutely, we will be sure to link Discord, Twitter, all of those social links. We want to make sure that if you're getting a chance to listen, go join the Discord. I've actually got an extra Raspberry Pi laying around, so I'm going to be sure to get my hardware deployed. Every project that I get a chance to chat with on the pod, I always have to get my hands dirty and get either hardware or be a part of some of the physical aspect to it, because that's what we're here for, and it's fun to get involved. So we'll be sure to link all that. But Robin, I want to say thank you again for coming on. This is a very interesting problem that you're solving. Again, it's one of these things where you don't even know how these sort of big facets come together and how all of this stuff works until you learn that there is a business behind it. And so understanding that the DeepIn model can be applied here and just take it to new heights is so incredible. So I wanted to thank you again for coming onto the pod. I'll be sure to link all of those social handles below. Go join their Discord. Go follow them on Twitter. All of these kinds of things. Check out their website. And we'll wrap it up here. But Robin, thank you so much again. And we'll see everybody on the next one.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon. Thanks.